All right, we're recording.
Awesome.
So it is another amazing, well, it's another episode of Webcomics Weekly. I won't say amazing because I just don't know how we'll ever top last week's perfection.
That was amazing. Well, you know, I hadn't, I was one of the last people to know, well, maybe not the last, but I didn't know what was so funny until you had processed it and posted it. And I laughed so hard that people came, my head was down, my eyes were watering, my shoulders were bobbing up and down. People thought I was weeping while I was listening to this thing. I don't know how we're going to top that.
I wasn't sure which one was funnier, the laugh loop or the fact that Scott was bidding farewell to all that he loved in his life from his pending death, because he literally said, "That's it. I'm dying. It's over."
Well, hey, there's a new voice on our show. Let's make some quick introductions. Chris and David were not available today because of our late start. Brad's here and I'm here. And joining us in studio is artist extraordinaire Scotty Young.
Hello.
Scotty, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Buddy. Big fan.
You didn't even clap, Brad.
I was clapping.
Okay.
It was delayed.
Oh, wow. Wow. Scotty, we're having you on for a couple reasons. First of all, we're huge fans of your work.
Yes. Thank you.
And I have a bunch of questions to ask you about your work specifically, even though the impetus of us asking you on today is to kind of follow up from last week's Webcomics Weekly, where we talked about this digital comics push, mm-hmm. because you've been making some forays into that.
Yeah.
And we definitely want to hear about that. But I have a rare opportunity now to ask you some questions about your work specifically. And forgive me that. Now, you do a lot of work for Marvel, right? Do you do mostly Marvel, or do you do DC work as well?
You know, I've never worked for DC. I've worked for Warner Brothers in the animation, on the animation side before. So I've worked on some DC properties as far as just character design and animation projects go. But I've never worked for DC. Actually, this is my 10th year working for Marvel. As far as comics go, outside of, you know, covers for some of my buddies or on independent books or Image or things like that, I've almost worked exclusively for Marvel as far as comics go. So that's pretty much what I've spent the majority of my time doing.
And my question to you is, have you felt that you've had a harder time getting work or being taken seriously because your style is more cartoony than it is rendered?
It's been an interesting journey on that front. I've always had a few people in my corner, which I think anybody in any creative field always has somebody who's their champion and kind of shepherds them along. And I've had a couple great people for me up there at Marvel over the years. So I wouldn't say that I've had a hard time getting work. I would say that there have been times where there were hurdles on the type of work that I would get, you know, and part of that is, I think it kind of meets in the middle of the type of work that I used to expect versus the type of work that I would fit on. Over the years I've come to, you know, there was a time when I was young and thought that the world was mine and everybody needed to move over. And so, you know, no matter what style I had, I should be able to do this book or that book, you know, the big books, right? When you're like, when you're 25 and you've done a whole six total issues in your life, you think, of course I should be doing Avengers. Of course I should be doing Uncanny X-Men, you know, but as you know, as I've gotten older, I understand where I fit, and I understand what I actually have fun on. So really my expectations have changed, and I think alongside of my expectations changing, I started to see some of those hurdles drop down. And I think there's also the side of things where if you stick around long enough, people stop thinking you're so weird and they actually get on the train a little bit, you know? So it's a combination of everything, but I wouldn't say I had a challenge getting work. It really just was, am I always going to get this kind of book, or am I always going to be the guy who's doing the side project or the offshoot projects? Or, you know, it really was, it was just a matter of the subject matter, really.
Wow. Yeah. There's an, because like I've talked to a couple people over the course of, you know, my journey through comics, and every time I come across someone who isn't doing really rendered work or has a more even stylized work, I know Ringo had a big chip on his shoulder about this. It was always like, well, I'll never get the big books because everybody wants
right
Brian Hitch. Everybody yeah. wants really tightly rendered stuff.
Yeah, Ringo and I spent hours on the phone talking about this subject. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he came from a time where it shifted, where there was a time where his style was the style, which was the time where I started reading comic books and that's what I wanted to do. And then, you know, it came to a point where, yeah, it did switch over a little bit. And you know what? I don't know. I just feel like as the older I get, the more I just don't try to play. I don't ever want to feel that I'm a victim of anything. So I just get in where I fit in. You know what I mean? I figure out what I want to do and see where I will fit in the world. I mean, whether it's at Marvel Books or doing my own stuff, or if I have to get whatever creative thing I want to get out on my own and do this for a company or whatever. I don't know. It's a weird industry out there. I mean, when I was doing one style on, you know, X-Men, a certain amount of people liked it, you know, and I had my core fan base that really dug it. And then I had people who were kind of like, eh, this doesn't look like the X-Men we want or whatever. But then you put me on Oz and the entire world turns upside down. It's a whole different ballgame because I'm doing something that there wasn't expectations leading into, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's my question. In terms of your progression in your career, what do you consider the tipping point? I mean, when does it become something that you're not so much running after a project as much as somebody's coming after you to get the project?
I think that really I think it's just like any industry that you're in, any line of business. It's when you've developed relationships with the company you work for, you've developed relationships with not only the editors, but the publishers and the editor in chief, and you know, just the whole company. Once you've developed some of those relationships, you become dependable. You become, you could become friends with some of them. You become a dependable worker. It's a little bit of all that. I mean, for me, it happened right around the 5 year mark, 5 or 6 year mark, where I had been at Marvel long enough to, you know, really get to know everybody well. I had a decent fan base built up. I mean, even though it may be a niche fan base, it still was a fan base that wanted a certain kind of book. And then it just becomes a part where they say, hey, you know, we've been together long enough that we're family now. You do get, I mean, cause I know there's been a lot of talk lately and there's been a lot of corporate this and the corporate masters wanted to, you know, we've seen a lot of funny videos and some blog posts and things like that. But I mean, my experience has been the exact opposite. I mean, people up there have, you know, when I had my son, people up there wanted to take care of it I've been up there since I was in my early 20s and I'm in my mid 30s now. So, it's been an interesting ride, but I think it's just like anything, the longer you build your base somewhere, the more you're going to become a part of that machine, and you'll be depended on and you'll be asked to do more and more.
Mm-hmm. You know, and also probably the ability to hit deadlines, stuff like that.
That's huge. Yeah. I mean, it's just like anything, right? You just learn the job. I mean, when I first started, I didn't know. I literally said this one time when I think I was 24 years old. And I was working on my first miniseries and I was on the phone with, I may have even been on the phone with Ringo at this time. We had just met. And I pretty much, I think, said these exact words. I don't care about storytelling. I just want to draw cool shit. So that's how young and awesome and knowledgeable I was at 24 or 25. versus, you know, or 23 even back then, versus now where, you know, you just, your mind changes. So back then I wanted you to give me, I wanted 2 months to pencil a book. Now I pencil and ink, me and John, my colorist, we pencil, ink, and color a book in 3.5 to 4 weeks, you know? So right. It's a whole different mindset. You learn the job, you start to understand cartooning, you get better at it over 10 years, of course, your skill set's gonna grow and grow. And then you become something that's actually needed to a, you know, you have developed into something of I'm not calling myself a commodity, but you are looking at, you become something that fits into the machine and can produce and help build up the, whether it's the creative portfolio or the line that they're looking to build or whatever, as well as your artistic portfolio, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, and you know, you spend a lot of time at conventions and you hear people going on about different other artists in the industry, and they're like, well, you know, why is he on that book? I'm better than him. And yeah, the answer is because he can get it done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah, your stuff might look better, but it takes you 3 months and you bitch about it the whole time. He's knocking out the work and he's playing, not playing the game, but he's fitting within the machine.
Yeah. And you know, I don't, some people vilify the quote unquote machine, but I think it's also just a matter of happenstance and chance a lot of times. I mean, do I think there are a million people that are better than me and that could have knocked out pretty much any book that I've ever done at Marvel? Sure they could have, but I just happen to be at the right place at the right time every time, whatever project. Now, you don't think at the same time there wasn't a book that I did want more that, you know, that I didn't get, right? I mean, it's all relative. There's always somebody, I'm always in the position that somebody thinks that they're in. You know, there was always something that I feel like, damn, I really wanted that job, you know, mm-hmm. but I got this one and this is how it works. So, I mean, I don't think that I've never thought that there's any magic powers to it. I mean, there's really, I'll say, you probably hear me repeat this over and over. I don't think comic books are that different than any other job you'll see in life, waiting tables, working at a factory. I mean, sometimes the person that gets the promotion happens to be the person that works the closest to the boss's office. Who knows? You know, he's in the forefront of his mind more often. And so a lot of things that just fall to chance. I know some people want to turn it into a conspiracy and think that, you know, the industry doesn't want them, or, you know, they're not the kind and I'm too this or I'm too that. I mean, I've been called too cartoony. I've been called this, but it only takes one person really to like your stuff to slide you in the right spot. So it's all just a coin flip, really.
Yeah.
Now compare that to the independent projects that you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, go ahead.
Oh no. Yeah. In other words, what?
What are some of the strengths of working independently as opposed to working in traditional media like Marvel, and what are some of the weaknesses?
Well, I mean, the benefits are the fact that you just get to sit in front of a Cintiq or a drawing table or whatever and write and draw, do exactly what you want to do with not feeling like, okay, well, we can't, you know, there's no smoking in Marvel books, right? Now, not that I have a hard on to make people smoke, but that's, I'm just giving like one limitation to say, okay, it doesn't matter the character.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It used to be.
Wait a minute. Doesn't Wolverine smoke cigars?
Oh, that's been ages now. Like that.
Wow.
There used to be two things. At first, it was no cigarettes. And then it was, you know, because that's when somebody could smoke a cigar. And then it was only villains could smoke.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, and this has been something for years. Again, I don't think I've ever been able to draw a character smoking in the 10 years I've been there. So, but again, that's not something that I mean, it's not some, I'm not fixing to rage against.
Right. You're not sitting over there champing at the bit saying, oh God, right, why can't I put a stogie in this guy's mouth? Howard the Duck. Right. That was the apex, man.
But that's just, that's the first example that came to mind to say,
Here's
something that a company decides is best for their product and says, okay, you guys go off and create the worlds and play with our characters, but you can't do this, this, or this, which is their prerogative. I mean, it's their world and I'm just playing with their toys. So that's
fine.
So as
an independent, you've got total creative freedom.
Yeah. You get to turn around, you got creative freedom. And then the downside and the plus side together is you have the choice on how to get your books out to the world, which I know that you guys have been doing this for a lot longer than me. I mean, you're probably much more experienced in that world than me, since I'm just now starting to finally get my own stuff to the world. But you can choose to go the route where you're just self-publishing, you're just putting it out, and you can kind of cut out all those hands that get there to get the piece of the profits. Because as you guys pointed out on your last show, there seems to be kind of an overwhelming desire for us to keep adding people into the pot when really the digital world seems it should go the exact opposite. We should be moving quickly towards the place where we should be able to go direct to people, or at least I mean, I understand that there's probably always going to be a middleman and everything, but if the middleman's going to be there, I want the middleman to do great things for me. Like if I write a novel and I publish that and start selling it on my website, I'm probably going to do okay. But if I put it on the Kindle store, I'm probably going to do very, very well. So I'm okay with Amazon taking a little piece if they're going to guarantee me like gigantic numbers.
I think so far that's kind of been what Comixology is providing, you know?
Yeah.
Because I could sell a PDF of a comic on my website, but, you know, maybe I'll reach a larger audience if the people that right now are definitely hot to buy comics for their iPad are going to the Comixology store to do it.
Right.
You know, they're looking for stuff there. They're not necessarily looking to download something and then sync their iPad and move it over.
Right.
But I think that the Comixology kind of providing – and the service they provide to a creator is you don't have to deal with Apple. You don't have to write the program. You don't have to figure out, you know, how to convert all the files.
Mm-hmm.
So they're providing a service. But what I don't understand is the Diamond Digital thing, you know, because that seems like that is servicing the Diamond and the retailers – as opposed to servicing the customer or the creator.
Yeah.
But so tell me about, because we're really curious about this last week. Tell me about the digital book you're selling and how it's been doing.
Okay.
As far as you're comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. Well, I've been part of my whole thing was I wanted to be very, very open with it. So I've posted on my blog each week and updated how much I've been doing. I thought, I just thought it'd be interesting for people to follow along. Now, I'm by no means the first person to sell PDFs of their work online. I know a lot of people have jumped in and said I'm spearheading some $2 comic revolution or something, but I really have never had a desire to be any part of any leadership of any sort of Braveheart-like movement. I mean, I saw another article, read it, and thought, oh, that'd be interesting. I'm going to try that. I'm sure others have tried it. I think all I did was maybe give a few of my friends the idea to try it too. But I just figured, like what you said, the Comixology, I had talked to David over there at Comixology about putting one of my art books up on Comixology. They sent me over the information and the breakdown of you know, the costs and the cuts and everything like that. And hey, they're great. And I do think their service is beautiful. I think it's great. But for what I want to do, I just felt that I could make out better. Part of me is a little bit scared of getting with a system that if I buy stuff, if God forbid Comixology goes out of business one day, I don't want $2,000 worth of my comic library to disappear. Like,
right.
That's one fear that I had. And then to be a creator on the other side of that, but I didn't even really think that deeply. Really, to be completely honest, I just thought about pure profits, right? Because I'm not going to try to act all like super hippie and virtuous, like I only do this just to put stuff out in the world. I do that, but I also want to feed my son and wife, and you know,
of course,
you know what I mean. So I when I looked at the numbers, I thought, hey, I understand why this is this, but it seems to me that there might be another way to cut out people putting their hands on it. So I read, I think there was an article floating around about this not 99 cents method. of selling a PDF.
Oh yeah, that was so convoluted.
Oh, it was like selling something with digital duct tape. It was so bizarre on the method. So, but what it did was one evening, it was like a Thursday night. I read that, and the next morning I told my friend Ryan Stegman about reading it. And I said, "Hey, I read this thing. It's pretty bizarre, though. I mean, it's a good concept. The concept is sound, but the method in which to do it is a mess. Like." It doesn't, you know, you'd be missing emails or whatever. And he said, you should just, you should find a way to sell Bernard digitally. And I thought, well, that was a book when I had my son, when we had our son last year, I took a month off of work. But I still wanted to make sure that I drew every day for at least a little bit while he was napping or whatever. So I started just doodling stuff. And to tie all the drawings together, I would draw this little alien character with whatever I drew. So like one day I saw a groundhog out the window, decided, well, I'll just throw an alien with him. And then I drew another thing and threw an alien with it. Then I started to write little jokes with it. And that lasted for a month. And I updated it on my blog for a month. And it was fun, whatever. By the end, there was like a funny little story to it or whatever. And then I thought, well, I'll print this in a book, you know, and I went through Lulu, I think, and just published up like 500 of them or whatever. But I mean, over the course of the year, I had sold some at conventions. I don't know how, I didn't keep track of how many I sold at conventions, but online I only sold about 150 over the course of the year. So Ryan was like, "Hey, Bernard's just sitting around. You should just see what happens. Just throw that online." And I was like, "Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea." So he and I over Skype just started Googling methods on how to, because I was like, well, I need a delivery system, you know, because I'm not just going to email it to everybody who PayPals me,
right?
Which was kind of that 99 cents method, basically. So I found out that I already sell my stuff through a Big Cartel, which is a storefront that you pay like kind of like a small monthly fee, and you get a whole bunch of space, and they have a nice little system that connects to your PayPal. Well, they had already teamed up with this PulleyApp.com, who was a system to sell digital stuff, music, books, whatever. So I was like, oh, well, that's fantastic. I've already got it. So within 30 minutes of us just saying, hey, let's do this, I already had the PDF. I shrunk the PDF, you know, to make it, you know, not printable. And shrunk my PDF. And within 30 minutes of the conversation, I had it live and was tweeting that it's on sale. The $2, I know, like I said, people think that I'm spearheading some $2 comic book movement. I just chose $2 because technically the book is 72 pages, but in print form, every other page was a number. It was just a blank page with a number on it. So, I mean, technically it's 72 pages, but if you really break it down, it's only like 30-some pages. So I just thought, well, $2, whatever. There's no print cost, and I just threw it up for $2. And the first day, from about noon on, I sold 105 copies.
Wow.
The first day. Now, this is what I found interesting is, I mean, I don't know. I don't really actually – every time you guys start talking about Google Analytics and shit, I get all jealous that I'm not smart enough to put all that stuff on my on my site, because I don't know really how many people come to visit my blog.
Don't be too jealous, because I've got all the stats and I don't know how the fuck to read them. I'm not lying.
And let me just put a quick pause in there.
Yeah.
Your blog is scottyyoung.com, which is S-K-O-T-T-I-E. YOUNG.com. And when you take a look at that, right at the top of the right hand corner is The Adventures of Bernard the World Destroyer, which is a charming character. And and it's just a real quick click to buy here now, digital copy, $2.
Yep.
And so on your first day, you cleared triple digits automatically.
Right out of the gate, 105 orders, and that was virtually, I would probably say, if I could track it, came almost strictly from Twitter.
And not only that, but probably judging from what you said about your sales at Lulu, would you say you cleared the profits in the first day?
Well, my Bernard, I had already made back my money for the print Bernards that I made. So that was that's why I didn't care about this. I mean, that's why. Not that I didn't care, but that's why I was just like, whatever. I'm going to try it out. I don't have anything to lose.
Are you asking comparatively, Brad?
Like, yeah. In other words, if you compared the profits you made from a year having this as a printable download, which is basically what print on demand is. To your first foray into doing a digital download, how would those two profits compare?
No, yeah, I beat it out. I beat it out that day because I mean, the printing cost on Lulu is pretty high. I mean, like all my art books and sketchbooks, I do offset printing because the print, you know, I know that I can sell through 1,000 and I can, you know, keep the price pretty low when I print up that many, and then my profit margin's a little higher. But on Bernard, because you go through Lulu, they're not. I mean, it was the first time I ever printed through Lulu, so it was just kind of a test out to see how that whole system worked.
And this is in no means putting down Lulu. I stand second to no one in my fandom of Lulu as a print-on-demand publisher.
Oh, but it's great. It was
an interesting comparison. So your first day, you've cleared $100. You're looking. You're kind of figuring that most of that traffic came right from the blog.
I think Twitter was the key. I hit up Twitter a couple times throughout the day. I posted once on my Facebook fan page, and I think once on my DeviantArt as well as my blog. So those places only. And that's it. I mean, there wasn't a press release. This wasn't a planned event. You know, there was no hype ramping up to this. I think at the time I had about 9,000 followers. Now I'm like 9,600 or something like that. But like, so I have about 9,000 followers and I just start telling them, hey, I'm trying this out, $2. And I'll tell you what, the $2 thing I think was the key, because everybody was just like, well, of course, right? Like, of course,
sure, why not?
I'll buy that for $2. I mean, and I have been doing a lot of research. Now, I didn't notice, like, I hadn't thought about selling my stuff digitally, but I've been doing a lot of research in the novel world about self-publishing and the e-books and everything, and just a lot of pricing and a lot of information. I've been doing a lot of research on that beforehand. So I had some idea of what prices seem to be the sweet spot and how people tended to be like, well, sure, I'll give that a chance at $2, you know. And when you think about it, I mean, $2, and then you set up PayPal to do micropayments, you know, you're only getting about – PayPal's only taking about 15 cents for order off that $2. So, I mean, you are literally making, like, pure profit, you know. Like, so while that first day I made 105 orders, the next day 88, 35 the next day. So after that it dips, right? Like,
right.
But up until this week, I barely had any days where it went below 10.
When was this officially launched?
This was January 14th.
And today is February 16th. So that's been a month where you've had at least, you'd say,
I have
in the area of at least 10 orders a day.
716 downloads so far.
716.
716 in the first month. And again, only using Twitter and my blog. Now, a few new sites caught on or like checked it out, but none of the main, you know, it'd be like one of CBR's columns, like Augie at Pipeline was really cool. And he, you know, in a couple of his Pipeline columns would mention it and talk about it. And then iFanboy talked about it a little bit. So that helped a lot. The idea that other creators now, Ryan Otley and Jason Howard, you know, brought their Grizzly Bear and Sea Shark and did it. Chris Eliopoulos, Katie Cook, a lot of other people have started to do it as well, which is great because then the circle just keeps, you know, everybody keeps retweeting each other. And so that stuff has been good, but there's still been no – the thing I find most interesting is 716 orders in a month, and there was really no system in place to push it. You know, I didn't,
you know, what is just occurring to me, and please excuse me if this is moronic, but it finally, like the British say, the penny dropped. For years, Scott, we have been doing this thing where we encourage like a donation. A $1 donation. You process it through PayPal, and then you set up your PayPal page that once the donation is complete, you can say, you know, when the transaction is complete, point them to this website or this URL. and then you point them to some place where they can download the desktop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's exactly how you could set this thing up.
Sure. Tell me a little bit real quick. So, here's my two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
This book you sold, this is something you had already done and mm-hmm. sold as a book. So 72 pages and the amount of work that went into that.
Yeah. And this speaks directly to what you guys, because you had mentioned this specifically last week. Everything that I did, everything that you're buying for that $2 is on my blog right now for free. Well, except I did get my friends to draw Bernard. So there's like 10 illustrations from like Chris Omni and Mike Norton and Mike Hawthorne and just like some of my buddies. So that's exclusive content in the back. But like as far as the meat of the book, it's 100% on my blog right now for free.
Well, not even worrying about that.
Right.
My question to you is, you had to put a certain amount of man hours into making that 72-page book,
mm-hmm.
right? In the hopes that when you sell it, you'll feel compensated for that time.
Sure.
Right? So your digital push of Bernard was actually a digital repackaging, because you've already drawn it and sold it through Lulu as a book.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have the art. Why not try it, correct?
Yeah. Well, I didn't ever sell it through Lulu. I just printed them through Lulu.
Okay, but you, yeah, all right, so yeah. You sold them at conventions and
right,
on your blog.
Right, okay. Right.
So you sold it as a physical object first, and now that you've been through that and made a profit off of that,
mm-hmm.
You're like, why not repackage it? Would you ever consider sitting down to draw something and invest the man hours mm-hmm. in something that you would sell initially digitally?
Absolutely. That's okay. Like, yeah, based on this small experiment, it's almost – yeah, I almost feel like if I don't, I'm kind of dumb not to try it. You know, like
mm-hmm.
I'm very much a person that's like, I want to try everything. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is it doesn't work. I can't hurt myself. You know what I mean? Like, I know that there's a big issue with piracy. People start to get freaked out with piracy. And I don't know. The way that I look at it is like pirates get what they want. I mean, if you're going to take stuff, you're going to take stuff. It doesn't matter if I put 775 padlocks on it, you're getting it. And there's another part of me that feels like people who pirate, I don't know if they were ever my customer in the first place. So I don't know if I consider them a customer lost. You know what I mean?
No, I'm not worried about the pirating.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about, I mean, your fans are going to support your work
right.
that you made, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, people are going to pirate it. You can't consider them lost sales. It's not like right. your fans are going to say, oh, I love Scotty Young's work.
Right.
And he's got a new thing out. Fuck paying for it.
Sure.
I'm going to steal it, you know. I think that'd be like saying, well, what if someone walks into a comic shop and steals my comic, you know.
Right.
Always the big issue for me is when we talk about you guys in comic books proper,
mm-hmm.
doing digital pushes, it's usually with work that's sitting around, you know,
right.
you've done it already. You've either sold it independently or Marvel sold it and you were paid a page rate for it.
Right.
And now they're selling it cheaper and repackaging it. So it's almost a secondary market.
Right.
And I'm really curious to hear from your point of view if you were interested, now that you've tried this as a secondary market, if you're interested in doing something original to sell digital right off the bat.
Yeah, I definitely am, because I mean, like in some ways, if I compare my numbers of how many downloads versus how many physical copies of Bernard made it out there, virtually this is that scenario. Like, so many more people have downloaded Bernard. I mean,
you might as well consider it not even a repackage.
I mean, totally, like in total, there's probably 200 physical copies out in the world. 200 physical copies out in the world right now versus my 716 downloads. So while technically, yes, this is a repackaging, in a lot of ways, it's not. If you just look at the numbers, and this is the main one, you know, this is the main version. So, I mean, I just think right now, I don't know how many people have thought about of going straight to digital. I don't know if it's because, like, and you guys know this because you guys broke this a long time ago in going for webcomics and creating the model that you guys have created, in that we all get locked into this into this mindset of this is how things have to be. You have to create a product. You have to go to a publisher. You have to go through Diamond. You have to go through the system, right? And I feel weird being a person that talks about the crazy creator-owned stuff, because I'm like, I have like the least creator-owned product out in the world ever. Like, there's people that have been in the trenches way, way longer than me. I mean, this is just my first foray. But for me, I feel like there's no harm in trying to just jump outside of it and see what happens. If for some reason they hit a wall and they don't sell, there's nothing to say that I can't turn around right then and go shop it to a publisher or self-publish or whatever.
Yeah.
I like to try to do things a little bit reverse. Instead of starting with a publisher, going through there and seeing if that works or not, and then going the self route, part of me wants to see how much I can do and get all the profit at the beginning. You know, so,
man, like, I am so glad that you said that, because the only thing that can happen out of that are good things. The worst thing that could happen is you gain a following, yeah, and now the publisher wants you more.
Yeah. It's really, I don't think that this model is very much different than what the model that you guys have been doing forever with your webcomics. The only difference is I'm packaging something, you know, smaller chunks and just slapping a few bucks on it, you know, and just saying, hey, support the art, support the industry that you love. Maybe you'll get a few laughs out of it, or maybe you'll dig this story or whatever. It's just that I don't, like, there seems to be so many ways to release your stuff to the world. Now that we have this iPad situation and all these other tablets coming out, I think that there's finally a way to monetize it that doesn't involve just advertising on the website, you know, which I've never been able to fully wrangle myself. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I'm not an idiot to my circumstances either. I do know that I have, you know, I have books published through Marvel. I work on a monthly book. I'm a fairly fast artist, so I'm able to do two things at once. And I know the Marvel stuff, you know, benefits, because, you know, a lot of people have asked me questions and I've answered them and they say, yeah, but you're you or whatever. So I don't know, you know, that's why I've called it an experiment. I don't know if this is a model that everybody could use. I don't, you know, because I have other friends that have tried it and their numbers are hitting walls slower. Now, I don't know the circumstances of that. You know what I mean? It's still the wild, wild west. I mean, there's still no method yet. It's maybe I do something original and I put it out the same way and I might sell a fraction of this. Who knows, you know?
My second question is about Big Cartel, because this is new to me, Big Cartel.
Uh-huh.
Is this to sell digital items or is it to sell physical items?
Big Cartel, the actual Big Cartel site, is to sell physical items.
Okay.
They have like a tier. They have a pricing tier. It's like you could get a Big Cartel site for free and sell like 5 items with 1 photo a piece. It's basically just an online storefront.
When you say 5 items, you mean 5 different products.
Yeah. If you have like 5 books that you want to sell, like 5 physical books, and you want to put them in a storefront with a shopping cart, you know, and the whole 9 and attach it, then they let you sell. And that's for free, with 1 photo a piece. And then your statistics are like, you know, they only give you certain. And then I'm like, I chose the next tier, which is like, it's like $10 a month. I can sell, I think, 25 items. I get 3 pictures for each item. Blah, blah, blah. And then the statistics are a little stronger, you know, and it all attaches to my PayPal. So that's really just a shopping. I mean, Big Cartel is as simple as a shopping cart. Now they got in with Pulley. Now here's where I struggled for a minute, because at first I had my digital comic. Now your listeners are probably going to get really bored with this, because I'm kidding.
No, they won't. There's a whole subsection of our listeners that are dying to hear this right now.
All right.
In fact, let me look at the chat room. Let me see what they're saying. Well, right now they're just saying, shut up, Scott Kurtz.
Okay.
All right. So go ahead.
Okay. So at first I had my digital comic set up with Pulley, and what happens is you can attach your Pulley account to your Big Cartel account. So when you can add a product to your Big Cartel, attach it to that digital thing that you want to sell. So somebody could come in, buy the print version of PvP, buy a t-shirt, buy a whatever, and buy the digital book of whatever collection that you have. And they can all put that in the cart and they can pay for it all at the same time. And then the process of the shipping, the stuff will come, and then they'll get an email from Pulley with the download. And they get three downloads. Each purchase gives you three downloads of that. So you could download it on this, download whatever. And there's no DRM on it. It's just a PDF. So, you know, they can do whatever they want with it, really. Now, here's where my problem was with that when I had it synced up with my other products is people were coming in. They were buying my new sketchbook stuff. They were buying my old art book junk. And then they were buying Bernard. Now, my PayPal account, you know, we ship all the stuff out myself. My wife, you know, packages the books during the day and stuff. And she was getting mad at me because before it was very easy to go into PayPal and do multi-shipping and print everything out at once. And all of a sudden I'm filling up my PayPal account with $202 orders of these digital orders. So it was kind of messing up our system. So what I did was I separated my Pulley and my Big Cartel. So now when you, I started a fresh PayPal account, and that's when, because you got to have a fresh PayPal account to do micro payments anyway,
sure,
which is bizarre. But so I have a separate PayPal account just for digital orders. And so now when you go to digital, it just goes straight through the Pulley. So it really depends on how you want to work that system. But because I sell books for more than $10, I didn't want to switch my entire PayPal over, because micropayments work on anything under $10. Anything over $10, and you start paying more than you would on normal PayPal percentages.
Yeah.
So,
are you saying that you absolutely need to sign up for a new PayPal account to do micropayments?
No, but it just depends on what. Like I said, if you plan on selling everything, like if you set your PayPal account up for micropayments, everything that comes through your account now is on that payment tier.
Oh yeah, they don't let you them. Remember that.
Yeah, it's a very bizarre system. And like I said, if you sell anything under $10, micropayments is awesome because you get less is taken out. But as soon as you get up, you know, when you get up to 15 and 20, then the cut that they're taking is actually more than it would be if you just had it set up as normal PayPal. Yeah. Which, and again, we're talking about, you know, 10 cents, 15 cents, 20 cents. But as you know, when you talk about 700, 800, 900 orders, that starts to add up. You know, that starts to add up. Like I released my new sketchbook last week on like Wednesday or whatever, and I've sold 175 of those. So if I'm selling that for 15 and all of a sudden PayPal's taking an extra 20 cents that they don't need to, it just gets – it gets tricky, but it doesn't. I mean, it's setting up a new one's just as easy, and it kind of helps me keep separate. I can actually, it's easier for me to see what's going on with the digital sales versus the print sales.
Keep it separate, yeah.
Yeah.
God, pretty cool.
I pretty much just put myself to sleep with all that jargon.
No, listen, it's what I'm telling you 100%. The people who listen to the podcast, even in the chat room, they're going nuts listening to this shop talk.
Mm-hmm.
They like it. Trust me.
Well, good.
Well, awesome. Well, Brad, do you have any other questions for Scotty?
You know what? At the expense of making myself sound like a dunce, I really have to get my head around starting a micropayments PayPal account. Because my stupid question is, that means that you can't necessarily bundle a digital download with some print sales, because those would be two different PayPal stores.
Yeah, it's a bizarre system. I mean, it really just comes down to, I mean, for me, I probably I don't know if this makes me smart or lazy, but most of it just came down to the fact that it filled my PayPal up with too many $2 orders, and it made it tougher for us to print out our shipping labels,
right?
For the print stuff, because you know, just because of the system that we have in place, so. It just, you know, it's just as easy just to set it up. And I mean, I have a Mac account, so I mean, and you could set up multiple aliases for your one account. So it wasn't even that big of a deal to set up a second one.
I remember one time when I was dealing with my Yahoo store, I had one item I wanted to have PayPal charge shipping on differently than my other items, and you can't.
Right.
You have to set up one kind of shipping charge for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's some micropayment option which alters the way that they charge their fee,
mm-hmm.
it's going to apply to the whole fucking account.
Well, the thing with Big Cartel is I set my shipping up through them. Well, I ship everything like the flat rates. That way I can like make sure that shipping is the same to everybody. But Big Cartel lets you attach like your shipping prices in the store there. So that way, like, it's one, if you order this item, it's this much. If this item is ordered with another item, then it's this much. You know, so I've just kind of done the math to make sure that if people order multiple stuff. So I kind of bypass PayPal's shipping calculations.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
On that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's other options too. I know that, like, I use a program called Shopify.
Mm-hmm.
I use not a program, but, you know, I partner with Shopify to do my store, and they offer digital sales through a partner company called Fetch. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, depending on who you're using, there's a way to sell things digitally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just like Big Cartel, because I had been using Big Cartel already for a year and a half as my store. That's why I went with Pulley. I don't know if they're better or worse than anybody else. I just went, oh, that's convenient. I'm hooking up with them.
No, absolutely right. I mean, it's as simple as looking at the terms and seeing if they're livable.
They work for you, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you guys this. What is the – because you guys seem to have maybe like some reservations on it. What? Because I know that you had mentioned – because I see you as having a way, way more of a voice out there and a connection to probably way more fans than what I'm able to reach. So – but you seem to think that you were going to struggle to hit like a, because I think you said 500 and you didn't think you'd maybe be able to hit a 500. So,
well, I think that the issue is that we've set, I mean, it's all about your brand and your expectations that you set up with your audience. So,
yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you said a couple times during this podcast and it's very flattering, but let me go ahead and correct you, because it's not like we designed or invented this system. We just kind of learned it as we went. It kind of developed underneath us as we went.
Mm-hmm.
I really do feel a lot of times that we happen to be at the right place at the right time and we didn't quit.
Right.
And so a combination of that, and I think the fact that we really pushed ourselves to have our work evolve as time passed,
mm-hmm.
as we stuck with it, is our equivalent of you saying, you know, what you did with Marvel to make sure that, you know, you took the projects that were there. You were there in the editor's mind. You know, we did the same thing with our audience. And the revenue streams have changed in the last, you know, 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it started with donations. It started with site sponsor. Then went to site sponsorships, then CPM ad sales, then physical goods. Then, I know, now it's a big thing for everyone says, you know, web cartoonists are just T-shirt salesmen. But the expectations we've set with our readers is that the work is free.
Right.
And then we monetize a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like it's a big switch off, or it's a big deal to switch gears in our readers' minds to say, okay, here's a new product and it is you paying for the work.
Right.
As opposed to, here's this new thing I'm working on. Here's the work for free as you expect it. Soon there'll be a book
right.
you can put on your shelf, or a T-shirt or a poster. And so I don't know that I could.
What would be the difference between just adding instead? See, the other time I've had a few other conversations with a few other people who make their living, you know, publishing graphic novels and selling it off to, you know, selling properties to Hollywood. And it seems like most people, whenever this subject comes up, is everybody takes it as a replacement and not an additive, where like you put your work online for free, business as usual, you collect it and sell it in a book at the end, business as usual. But what would be the harm in adding, and this is just a question, but like, what would be the harm in adding the extra? Cause it's like exactly the same thing as a collection, except for
here it is digitally.
Yeah.
I mean, for people, now you can have it on your iPad.
Right. For people like me, say who like as far as books go, I like to read a lot of novels. When the Kindle came out, I mean, I have an iPad, but I still enjoy reading books on my Kindle more.
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah,
it's a better reading experience.
Yeah, because the Kindle, like, I feel this is gonna get on a whole. Like, this is really showing my nerdy side, but the iPad is just, it's actually more bulky than people want to admit. Like, it's heavier to hold.
It's super hard to hold if it's not in a case.
Yeah, when you put it down, when you hold it at the bottom, it's so middle fat heavy that it's not very fun to read on for very long. So, and the Kindle, I have the Kindle. Well, I had the Kindle 2, and now me and my wife got the Kindle 3. Man, the Kindle 3 is amazing.
It's great.
It's so light. I love it. It's so little. But back to my thing, when like for me, who switched over to the Kindle, that was like the best thing that ever happened to me, because if a book is still only available in print and I want to read it, of course I'm going to do that. But I'm still always going to search out the fact if you have an ebook for me to read on the Kindle first. I'm always going to do that because that's the way I've chosen now to consume my novels. So I and there are times as a fan, it's nice for me as a fan because in the novel world, I get to look at it as only a fan. In comic books, I'm always like torn because I'm like, I'm a creator and I'm a buyer and I'm a fan. So it's a weird world, but I get to kind of look at it purely from a fan over there, that when I'm looking for a novel and I go to the Kindle store on Amazon and I'm looking for your book, if it's not there, a part of me gets mad at you. Like, I'm like, yeah. A part of me just says, how hard would it be for you to take my money? I have it here, right? Like, I have my money. You are going to have my money in 3 seconds if you just had your product here. So that – I don't know if – again, if it's if you put it out and you did exactly the model that you do now and you just added one extra Lego block on top, the only thing that could happen is at some point you decide that it's hurting you and not helping you and you take it away. And you just say, well, I'll just take that Lego block back off. But it's not – I don't think it's a replacement like a lot of people are thinking. I still think that those two crowds are different people. The print crowd and the at least at this very moment. I mean, in 10 yeah. years, we're going to be talking a whole different conversation. But that's I that's what I wonder on some people if what's the actual fear of doing it?
It's not a fear. I don't think I have until this moment have ever considered it.
Okay.
I think in my head, and maybe it's just old habit and old thinking processes, but my thought process has always been, I'm already offering it digitally, now I'll offer it print. And right. There's no need to offer it digitally again because I've offered it digitally. But, you know, a good example is my newest book I'm putting out is a best of book where, right. You know, I've picked out my favorites and written some commentary on what informed the humor. And that's not online. Right. You can go read those strips, but I could sell that as a digital book. Right. And you know what? I think I'm going to try it.
Yeah. Can I expose my ignorance? Last time I checked in, and this will be about the third time I did that today. The last time I checked in with Kindle, it was text only. Now, when you guys are talking about reading images, so that's been updated. So now you can actually put stuff out for Kindle that is image.
It's easier to sell a PDF for your iPad for iPads.
Yeah. The image
much easier.
The image because of the way that the formatting of Kindle is, the image shows up a lot smaller than you want it as a comic book guy, unless you got the big Kindle. But yeah, I mean the PDF still is for like almost iPad people. Yeah. Or any other tablets that may be out there, or laptop, or whatever. But this is what you were saying about your new book is that's original, and you're going to put that out there. But what I think what's because there's already a digital version, which is the strip itself being online for free. The thing is that I don't view it as that's what you're selling. You're not selling them the digital version. You're selling them the digital convenience of having it all. Like for me, many times I don't buy single issues of comics anymore, just because everything's traded, and so I will buy trades if I want to read it. But back in the day when it was iffy, I would buy the issues. And then if that series did well enough to go to trade, then I would buy the trade for convenience because it's much more convenient for me to be able, if I want to reread it or if I just want to, as an artist, just want to browse through and get some inspiration. It's much more convenient. So that's what I view the digital thing as more than anything is you're like, especially for web, I think especially for web comic people, like anybody who has, I love web comics. I love being able to sit there and click through. But here's the thing. With some of the new technology, it's not as easy. Like, weirdly enough, on the iPad, it's not as convenient to read webcomics as I would like it to be because WordPress always kicks me back down. Like when I'm reading, like if I'm reading, like say Ramon Perez's Kookaburri, which I think is like just amazing. An amazing webcomic, right? He's just amazing. When I read that, I love it, but I'm almost frustrated because every time I turn the page, it kicks me back down. I'm back at the banner. I got to re-scroll down. I can't click the page. So all of a sudden in tablet form, I'm weirdly enough, even though I'm online, I'm kind of a step backwards as far as the reading experience goes.
I could almost see this $2 PDF being used in a way that maybe you take each month's worth of comics as a web cartoonist. Each month's worth of comics and offer them, almost going back to the idea of having a monthly comic. You know, going instead of doing web comic, then print to trade, and then wait for the trade to get old and offer the trade as a digital download. This might even be an intermediate step where you do the web comic and then every month you offer a $2 PDF for a month's worth of comics and then go to trade. And then offer the trade again as a big digital download.
I think the only thing that you're doing is you're like, every time I try to do something, I try to look out and see if I'm taking anything away from anybody. Like anytime I put a new book out, or if I think about repackaging, or I do a new set of prints or whatever, I try to see all angles to make sure that I'm not going to get crazy emails or things from fans saying, "Why are you fucking me?" Right? Like, and. Really, if you look at the situation like you just laid out, you're not taking anything away from anybody. You're only opening up another door for a new want or a new desire to come through, which is if people want it for free, it's there. Like you're not forcing anybody to buy something that they don't want to buy. They're enjoying your work. They're always going to be able to enjoy your work. You're not saying you're ever going to take down the year's worth of you guys' webcomics. All you're doing is saying, hey, I know there's a new group of you guys out there in the last year since the iPad came out that like the convenience of being able to pop open iBooks or Comic Zeal or any of the, you know, viewers. And you don't have to do PDF. You can do PDFs and a CBZ or a CBR or whatever. You can offer multiple formats. You know, because I've had a lot of people say, oh, well, instead of PDFs, can you do CBZ? Whatever. You know, and I'll say, yeah, sure, the next time I'll do that.
How do you make one of those? Do you know?
I'm not sure yet. I don't know.
We'll have to look it up and make that a focus of a new webcomics.com article, Brad.
By all means. Yeah, I got a feeling we're going to have a lot of new articles coming out of this. I do want to interject. I'm going to have to go pick up kids in about 5 minutes.
No, I'm going to have to go too. Let's wrap up real quick. One thing I want to say, and you can stay for – this is like on the Stern Show. Scotty, can you stay for the news?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Real quick, the news. Borders has filed Chapter 11. They're going to restructure. They're going to close, I think, about 200 of their 600 stores.
197.
Okay. Now, holding the bag on the hook for the money lost are publishers, right? So they're going through a list of monies owed and... like Penguin Group is owed $41 million and Simon & Schuster is owed $33 million. So according to the court documents, Diamond Distribution is owed almost $4 million.
Holy moly.
Now, you know, granted, once a number gets over 10, and I'm talking $10, not 10,000, I start to lose understanding of what means anything. But right. Like, doesn't it seem like 3.9 million would be a devastating hit to Diamond to know they're never getting 3.9 million back?
Yeah, because they're in protection now, so that money is unobtainable.
The scary thing about that is too is like, not to say that, you know, Marvel and DC and your bigger companies aren't going to, you know, maybe feel a little smack on the butt for that, but one of the scary parts of that from is the smaller guys, like the Arkeas and the IDWs and the, you know, just the small image and the smaller publishers that really, you know, can't afford to have somebody just go, we're not really going to pay you today.
Well, I mean, I do need to back that up. It's not that they're never going to get paid. What's going to happen in bankruptcy, if I understand it correctly, is that they'll go through this bankruptcy protection. They'll come out. And then at that point, there's a settlement and they'll get most likely paid a percentage of that.
Right. But the bottom line is if there are PvP books at Borders bookstores and that were sold and that Diamond is waiting for that money so they can pay Image, so Image could pay me, I'll never make money off those books.
Right.
And that's five books sold that I will never see $4 on. And I don't know if you're counting, but four times five is at least $106. And that's at least four Starbucks lattes.
Well, listen, so, Scott, all you have to do is sell it through the Diamond Digital situation and you'll pay them $5. So it'll all
there
be
we go. We've come full circle.
Thank you. I knew that we were coming around to that. That's awesome.
Also in the news, may I submit a news item?
Yes.
Coming up March 4th through 6th, Emerald City Comic Con. It is our, and we were talking to Scotty before the show. I can speak for you as well as I can my cohorts on the podcast. It's our favorite show of the year. One of our favorite shows easily on the calendar. The first big show of the comic convention season. And it's for the first time they're going to be 3 days. So it's going to start on Friday in Seattle.
Yeah, it really is my favorite show of the year. And even more so now that it's local for me.
Yeah.
I think this is the first year that's a local show for me. But Seattle Comic Con, or the Emerald City Comic Con, has been my favorite show since the first time Demonakis invited me out. And it's only grown since then. Last year was nuts. And from an exhibitor standpoint, from an independent creator standpoint, I made more money in 2 days at Emerald City than I did in San Diego. And that's because I think Leonard Nimoy was there. Now, this year, Shatner's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all going to trickle down, baby.
Oh, snap.
Oh, snap. And no, I know, Scotty, you're going to be there, right?
I am going to be there. I love that show as well. I love the fact that it's downtown. It's Seattle's a beautiful place for those who haven't been. And Jim and George are just fantastic. They take care of you so well. It's weird to even call it a big show, but it is. I mean, it went from being, it's a perfect size show to me. That's what I like to call it. Yeah. It's like the perfect size show.
And it's a major stop on the convention calendar now. I mean, it started as a very homey kind of show, and they started small and they've built it into something major. And if I remember last year's conversation, it sounds like the city has really started to recognize Emerald City Comic Con as a citywide event. And the city, I don't know anything for sure, but I look to see the city rallying behind this show and really kind of getting into the act the way you see in San Diego and New York and so forth. I remember, I am not going to blow it by saying anything, but he had one thing in particular that I am so looking forward to see if it actually does happen, that they were bouncing around, and that's all I'm going to say about that. But we are also doing, Scott, a live Webcomics Weekly podcast on Saturday night, Saturday sometime through the day?
We are?
I know we're doing a live. I know we're doing a panel. Yeah, we're
sure.
Check your local, Brad. Check your local listings. But we are doing a panel. We'll do a live version of this podcast, and it's going to be just aces from start to finish.
Well, and don't forget that Saturday is Classoline Alley Day.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Where we are going to emulate the generations that came before us, when cartoonists used to get up and put on a dress shirt and a tie and slacks and sit down at their drawing tables if it was a photo shoot day. But we like to pretend it was every day. But so if you are coming to Emerald City Comic Con on Saturday, we're classing it up. Not just a t-shirt and sweats, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I'm not saying wear a tux. I'm just saying come styling.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And to put a bumper on it, 3 o'clock Saturday, Webcomics Weekly Live. So put it in your book, Scott.
Very excited.
But yeah, I can. I've got my suit all picked up, man.
All right.
I am champing at the bit to get to this.
All right. Well, Scotty, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
No, thank you guys. It was a blast.
Everybody listening, thanks for listening. And Skype, I don't know whether to thank you or be upset that there were no issues this week. But we always have it to fall back on and listen to last week's show.
Wonderful.
So this has been Webcomics Weekly, your source for laugh tracks.